Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life.
Hello, and welcome to what is a fantastic new podcast, Faith and Film. Now, you might recall that we've been looking at movies in the past few years on catholicnews.org.uk with the wonderful, knowledgeable Father Peter Malone, MSc, who's coming to us from Melbourne, Australia. Peter, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. This evening, James, and you're in the morning.
I'm afraid it will always be such. Now, we no longer have you in London, because you were, of course, based here, weren't you, in West London?
I was there almost 12 years.
My goodness. And back in Australia for the last few, and I have to say, we miss you over here. In fact, Peter, you read my film reviews when I used to write on film, and you've sent me around the world. I've been introduced to all sorts of wonderful films, thanks to your good self.
And you've been to interesting places. If I'm right in thinking you went to Iran too, didn't you?
I did. A place I really enjoyed very much. And a good festival, actually. Lots of excellent Iranian films I saw that year. Back in 2006, that was now.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
I know.
Come to think of it, it's 4 years since I was there last, so time certainly passes.
Well, must do something about that, Peter. You're up to how many countries you visited now? It's in the 80s, isn't it?
Actually, 97, James.
97.
Failed to get the 100.
Now, Peter, for those that don't know, you've written many books on film. You've interviewed several directors. You're a proper film buff, it has to be said.
Well, I've been telling some of the publicists lately at previews, when they say, you know, where's your outlet and all the rest of it, and I say, this is the 47th year. So I've definitely got to complete three more years to get that 50.
Three more countries, three more years. I think you can hit some milestones, can't you?
It's an incentive, James, now that you say it.
Well, enough about us for the time being. Should we go straight into the three films that we've selected to talk about for this month's inaugural podcast?
Well, you can lead me on.
Well, let's do so. Peter, the film The Giver, Jeff Bridges, Meryl Streep, the former Mrs. Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes, directed by a fellow Aussie, is it not, Philip Noyce? Tell us a little bit about this one.
Well, it's one of those futuristic kinds of films from young adult novels. So we've had several Hunger Games and about to have two more, I think. And we've had Divergent, which is going to have a sequel, Insurgent. And I saw one just recently called The Maze Runner. And The Giver, I think, is in that vein. It's future society, things are going wrong, and the young adults have to make some kind of decisions, even revolt against the government. But The Giver is a calmer kind of film, much shorter. And as you say, it was directed by Philip Noyce, who made some of our Australian classics, including Newsfront. But I remember he told me many years ago, when he was young, one of his ambitions was to go to Hollywood. And so he made Patriot Games and The Saint and various other films. So he's achieved his ambition, and here he is still going.
From great suffering, great pain, came a solution. Communities, where disorder became harmony.
The way things look and the way things are very different.
What do you think would happen if you skipped your morning injection?
I cannot prepare you for what's going to happen.
Now, this is quite a nice film to look at, or I thought so anyway, but it's a little bleak in parts, isn't it? Especially Meryl Streep, whose character is sort of painted very bleakly, really, in this.
Well, I thought it's a sign that Meryl Streep mustn't have any vanity because she's made to look rather ugly, like a hag. She's in charge of this particular society, which is, on the surface, very happy because everybody is the same. And the film opens with a flight over all the houses in the community, which are all exactly the same and all filmed in black and white. And so they make the symbolic use of black and white and colour so that gradually, as the central character, who I'd better mention is played by an Australian from Cairns, Brenton Thwaites, who was Prince Charming in Maleficent.
Mm.
So just added that, a bit of patriotic addition. But it's when he is given a special task. He is to be the receiver of memories, and they are given by the giver, who's Jeff Bridges, in fact. And he's the only one who can remember the past and can give advice when it's necessary. And the young man then is made the apprentice to the giver. Whether it's the giver's intention, but he changes, and gradually his perceptions are in colour, and colour pervades all his activity. So it's an interesting use of colour to create an atmosphere and for audiences' response to this particular society.
Do you know, rightly or wrongly, it makes me think somewhat of Pleasantville or even The Matrix, you know, things having to be laid out in a certain order, things not actually as they seem necessarily. And then you get that wonderful phrase from Meryl Streep, when people have the freedom to choose, they choose wrong. That's a bit stark.
And that comes right at the end. I think she's in a rather defensive stage by that statement, but it certainly was one of the most significant ones in the film. By the way, I must say I hadn't thought of Pleasantville, which used the same colour black and white techniques about the television world and the real world. So I think that's an interesting connection, one of those essays for university film studies.
Sorry, I make bizarre connections sometimes. It just struck me a little, that one.
I think that's a very good connection. I wish I'd thought of it.
Well, I think the one message I get from this one, Peter, is there isn't a perfect world, is there?
No, there isn't, and that's the interesting thing as the new giver makes his way beyond the boundaries and discovers a different kind of world. It's the possibility of making mistakes but having a good life rather than just the mere conformism.
Now, from our Catholic perspective, it would seem a bit odd, wouldn't it, to say that when people get the freedom of choice, they don't choose correctly. That's not wholly true, is it?
It isn't wholly true. And it's the risk, however, that people say God takes by giving us our freedom, and we can still have, a good life. The trouble is, of course, people are generally making bad choices. I shudder to think about the choices being made in the contemporary world in terms of terrorism and wars and diseases and infections and plagues. We do live in a sad kind of world, and yet I think we do have our freedom and we are often graced. And that's the message, I think, of the giver.
Well, sum this one up for us, Peter. Now, you and I have done podcasts for a few outlets in the past, and I know not to ask you to rate this or give me some kind of star system or marks out of 10. We don't do that. But tell me, is this film, The Giver, by your fellow Aussie Philip Noyce, any good?
I think it is good. I think it's an interesting variation on this futuristic theme. And I think it's got, in its brevity, a fairly direct way of communicating its message.
Great. Well, that's The Giver, Peter. Let's move on now. Our second film we're looking at today is The 100-Foot Journey. And again, you see, you're going to send me reminiscing down memory lane. And the film Chocolat with Juliette Binoche. Because The 100-Foot Journey has a very French theme, doesn't it? One of food and cooking.
It does indeed, and could I make an objection to the title immediately, please?
Please do.
People in Britain and people in the United States are the only people in the world, I think, that use that kind of language for feet instead of metres and centimetres.
Is there another working title? Have other countries got other titles for this film?
No, I don't think so. But I thought they've certainly made it for the English language audience in Britain and the United States. I'm not sure how the 30 metres journey would go. So there you are.
Now, you know, and I'm not going to give too much away about our third film, but there is a bit of a French flavour to this. Again, a very attractive film to look at, this one. Tell us a bit about this film.
Well, I found it interesting that it started in India, and a family in Mumbai who have a very successful restaurant. It's not quite explained, or I didn't get it, exactly who was setting up riots around the restaurant, but the family decides that they have to leave. And one of the places they go to is the United Kingdom, and I was very taken by their attempt to set up something in London, but they're living not quite in the flight path at Heathrow, but only a few feet, yards or metres under the landing planes. So they decide that's not the future for them out in West London. And they go travelling, and suddenly the car has a breakdown, and they see this wonderful building, which in fact has been abandoned by previous owners who tried to make a successful restaurant, and they decide to buy it and set up an Indian restaurant in the middle of France.
Bonjour. Puis-je vous aider? Can I help you?
Sorry. We were just looking around here.
This is private property.
Okay, Papa, let's go.
Excuse me, do you own this property?
No.
Oh, then you are trespassing too.
Papa,
do you know the owner of this place?
Yes, I know them very well.
1 minute.
They've gone back to Paris. But they asked me to keep an eye out for them.
Oh, I bet you do. How much are they asking?
Papa, please.
1 minute, relax.
Oh, you must understand that a property of this size in this village would be very expensive. Well, I heard you asked for a discount in Claude's hotel.
Papa, you didn't.
Chup rahe.
Please do not do.
Baat karne de mujhe. Madam, asking for discount doesn't mean I'm poor. It means I'm thrifty.
Now, we've got a few UK links here, haven't we? We've got the great Helen Mirren. People might remember Om Puri from East is East, amongst other films.
Yes, and Helen Mirren is at her most regal. She is a French lady who, it must be said, has her own restaurant on the other side of the 100-foot journey.
And she's not happy, is she? Not having Indian cuisine being served up in what she considers to be a rather brash fashion.
And she does her best to try to stop the progress of the restaurant, including, for instance, buying out a lot of the food from the market before the Indians can get there. So a few slightly dastardly deeds. But I'd have to say that in the middle of it, I was rather surprised because there's an outburst of racism. And that certainly offends Helen Mirren as well. And it's the change then so that the 100-foot journey can be a more peaceful one than it was initially.
So these two people, who are culturally very different, snobby, I think I saw in one of your reviews on this film in terms of Helen Mirren, but they can unite against a common cause, can't they, in that sense?
Yes, she's very much, as I say, offended by the racism, including one of her chefs. But Om Puri's son is the star of his own restaurant. He's a wonderful cook. And Helen Mirren's place has, I think, 2 Michelin stars. And she has a dream of getting a third one. And not to give too much of the plot away, the son is actually allowed to cross the street and to learn something of French cooking in order to get that third Michelin star.
Now, it makes me smile because she considers this offensive restaurant to be the sort of epitome of the death of taste, doesn't she?
Well, it does look a bit gaudy as you look across the street with all the bright lights. And there was an arch, but it falls down and they get rid of that. And the clientele is different. In her restaurant, she has politicians there who have their favourite meals, all that kind of thing. But on the other hand, there's a kind of friendliness about the Indians and, well, I suppose this does slightly give it away, but people would expect it. The ending is happier than sadder.
I mentioned with the lead up to this film that Hellstrom obviously directed Chocolat back in 2001, a film I remember well from the Berlin Film Festival that you kindly sent me along to that year. Similarities? It sounds like there are a few.
I suppose it is, really. He's back perhaps on a familiar ground, and the food is most important. I should have said that. Anybody who likes looking at different kinds of foods on screen, this is certainly one to go to. So with that in common, and a transformation, I suppose, of French people by outsiders, there is something in common between the two films.
Great, Peter. Well, that's The 100-Foot Journey, even though you're taking exception to the use of 100 feet in this case. Shall we move on then? How about Magic in the Moonlight, Peter? That's our final film for this month, starring Colin Firth, amongst others. Woody Allen, of course, directing this one. Is this sort of classic Woody Allen? Certainly what I've seen, it looks very beautiful.
It certainly looks very beautiful. It's back in this time in southern France, most of the action. It does start in Berlin in 1928 in one of the cabarets where Colin Firth's character is a British travelling magician with a very elaborate show. But a friend of his, who's also a magician, says there's a fake medium staying with a family in southern France, and Colin Firth, as a sceptic, should come and expose her. As regards Woody Allen, in recent years, I think he's done two wonderful films, Midnight in Paris and Blue Jasmine. He's done one which really didn't appeal to me at all, To Rome with Love. And this one is somewhere in between, but more towards Midnight in Paris than To Rome with Love.
Good evening. I understand you're holding a séance tonight.
She's been waiting for the right moment, and now she says the planets are in alignment.
And what do they have to be in alignment with? Your vertebrae?
Can you do the séance if someone in the room is a non-believer?
And when you contact the spirits, will we be able to see the souls? And how are they different from ghosts? Or are they ghosts?
I should think souls are quite different.
Have you ever heard of ectoplasm?
Ectoplasm. Now, isn't that a milky substance, rather like yogurt?
You are a joker, aren't you?
So you're saying it might look like yogurt, but it will be Mrs. Catledge's former husband.
Now, Stanley, the Colin Firth character, you kind of know what you're getting with Colin Firth, don't you? And I think, you know, it looked like a pretty standard but entertaining Colin Firth performance, as far as I was concerned. Would you agree?
Yes, it's certainly standard Colin Firth, except that he's the equivalent Woody Allen character. So we're hearing Woody Allenisms in an English accent, which makes it just that bit different. And I suppose gives a bit of feeling for the sardonic remarks that Woody Allen is well noted for. But also, as the film moves on and this expose of the fake, who's played by a very attractive Emma Stone, whose mother is with her, and she's at a mansion in the south of France, forgive the patriotism, but the owner is played by Jackie Weaver, one of Australia's main actresses, so I just put that in innocently. And as I watched her, I thought she's sitting there at a séance, and she's thinking, aren't I lucky to have been in the film Animal Kingdom and to have got an Oscar nomination? And here I am in a Woody Allen film.
Well, she's bold as brass, that is for sure. And this is a film with charm, isn't it? It's as you've said in your review, it's a tongue-in-cheek romantic comedy. But it is very stylish. I think stylish is a good word for this one.
It is. It's, I suppose, the mansion, the grounds, the coast, a planetarium, all look really very good. And remember, it's set in the late 1920s, so it's got that kind of historic aura about it, and very attractive to that extent. And the performances are certainly very interesting and well done.
So, Peter, that's our three films, The Giver, The 100-Foot Journey, and Magic in the Moonlight. Now, if you were to say to our listeners, you know, if you've only got yourself £5 to £10 and you want to go and see one of these, which one would you pick?
If you are wanting an entertaining night out, it has to be The 100-Foot Journey. If you are a specialist, you would look at Woody Allen. And if you are a younger person, you'd probably be more interested in The Giver. So our films, I think, all good and have very different appeals for different audiences with their £10.
Now, Peter, this is why you're good at what you do. You've gone for something for everyone, haven't you?
Hadn't intended it, but now that we've been talking, that's the conclusion I would draw, yes.
Marvellous. Well, we're just about at the conclusion of our first in our new format of Faith and Film. So, Peter, thanks ever so much. It's great to talk to you from Melbourne, Australia, for those that might have forgotten. And you've not let us forget, have you, with your patriotism that has weaved through this podcast?
And I should mention, as we're doing this particular podcast, it's at the beginning of our spring and the weather is beautiful. How's yours?
Well, right. I'm going to get patriotic on you now. It's actually not that bad.
Excellent.
British weather. Bet you miss it, don't you?
In winter here, and people say how cold it is, I say if you've lived in London in winter, this is very mild. So, to some extent, I do miss the British weather.
Ah, well, we miss you. Peter, will you join us again next month? Pick three films for us and we'll do this again.
I will, James. We'll see what's releasing both in your side of the world and what's releasing in our side of the world.
Well, there you go, listeners. A truly global podcast with the excellent Father Peter Malone, MSc, from Melbourne, Australia. Please do join us next month where we'll have more films for you, more clips from movies, and more to talk about. Thanks ever so much.